Hi, welcome to the Introvert Entrepreneur Podcast for December 5th, 2011. I'm Beth Bielow, founder of the Introvert Entrepreneur. Through my business, I offer coaching, training, and presentations that inspire introverts to understand, own, and honor their natural strengths. I also help extroverts understand the introverts in their lives, as well as how to tap into their own inner introvert. With 2011 about to draw to a close, it's a perfect time to reflect on the progress you've made so far this year and what's next for you in 2012. I invite you to think about how you're going to surround yourself with people who will raise the bar on what's possible for you. This year, I've found three things enormously helpful. First, I have a small circle of colleagues with whom I can share my successes and frustrations, and we support each other in the day-to-day business of being an entrepreneur. Second, my accountability partner has been an invaluable member of my team, helping me to concentrate on what's most important and get things done. And last but not least, my coach has provided me tools to bring me focus and growth, and he's also encouraged me and given me a kick in the rear when I've needed it. So I invite you to take some time to consider, who do you want to have on your team in 2012? Decide to make 2012 the year that you kick things up a notch and reach out to people who can help you. If you want to learn more about how coaching can support you and your business, I have some openings this month for a no-obligation 30-minute information session. And if for some reason I am not a good fit as a coach for you, but you're still interested, I have a great referral network that I can send you on your way to another coach who might be a better fit. So I encourage you to go online. You can schedule your appointment right there at theintrovertentrepreneur.com. So speaking of 2012, I've decided to make it the year of LinkedIn. While Facebook has gotten a lot of my time and attention, and maybe it's gotten a lot of your time and attention, LinkedIn is a fabulous treasure trove of connections and resources. I thought for the longest time that it was primarily for job seekers. My guest for this podcast sets me straight and shares ways that both the seeker and the entrepreneur can leverage LinkedIn for stronger relationships and a stronger business. We also talk about being an introvert entrepreneur and how LinkedIn is a perfect platform for the introvert to connect with others. Matt Youngquist is a Bellevue, Washington-based career coach and outplacement consultant who specializes in helping Puget Sound professionals navigate through today's uncharted employment waters. In his current role as president and founder of Career Horizons, he consults with clients at all levels on how to strategically manage their careers, explore their occupational options, package their qualifications in resume format, and market themselves successfully to new opportunities. To date, he has personally assisted over 7,500 clients through the job hunting process, in addition to the audience he reaches through his writings for the Seattle Times and the Puget Sound Business Journal. Hi, Matt. After seeing you at a recent conference, I'm so excited to have you on the line to be talking about your business and employment counseling and LinkedIn specifically. So thanks for being here.
Well, thank you so much for the invitation.
So I want to kick off by hearing a little bit about how you got started doing career coaching and employment counseling, because I bet it's a pretty hot area right now.
Yes, I am one of the few folks lucky enough to have fallen into a field that is in strong demand right now for obvious and unfortunate reasons. But it certainly was never any grand plan of mine. I was a advertising major coming out of college about 20 years ago and went out to get a job and failed miserably. So the only job I was able to get was a friend of a friend who said, hey, I know this company does some kind of executive career related something and they need some administrative assistant / data entry help. And walked in, somehow proceeded to get hired, and just fell in love with the field as I started realizing what these people actually did, which was a form of marketing and advertising, but for people.
Great. And so from there, you know, I'm guessing you didn't stay in an admin position for very long and probably started digging into actually working directly with people at some point.
Yeah, like so many of us, I think, that don't have it all figured out, you know, from third grade, you just get in something, you apply yourself, and you get better at it. And so, yeah, I started after a couple of years of admin just working with lower-level clients, writing resumes, and by the mid to late 90s was pretty much running their whole career development function while the company went on to do some other types of consulting and coaching.
So at some point you realized you were an introvert, because that's one thing we chatted about before we had this conversation. And I'm wondering, I guess first, you know, when, at what point did that come into your awareness? And then how has it played a role in how you've shaped and built your own business?
Well, it's such an interesting topic that you focus on, and I love so much of your stuff about the introverted nature, because anyone who's around me my whole life probably could see I wasn't as gregarious as most people. I had the weird distinction of being voted both most studious and class clown in high school, so how those two things go together. but, you know, I think I sort of knew in my heart I wasn't nearly as social as most people. I grew up in Juneau, Alaska, kind of a small town, wasn't just really used to getting out of my shell. But, you know, as I got into the field, I did and started taking various assessments. I mean, they confirmed, you know, every time I took any type of assessment, you name the type, it's that I was basically off the charts as far as true introversion, not shyness, as I'm sure you've educated your listeners, but just preferring to kind of keep to myself, guard my time, and really watch my, you know, energy and calendar versus people who would be out socializing every night of every week kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I hadn't, for some reason I didn't make the connection between, okay, so you do career counseling and employment counseling, and that typically has involved probably, you know, someone assessing their personality and taking a closer look at that to see what would be a good fit for them.
Yeah, and I usually take, you know, any assessments I might even consider for my clients. I mean, dozens over the years that I've taken, and it was like, wow, off the charts introverted yet again. And a lot of people have a hard time believing it because I do a lot of public speaking, and one-on-one I can get pretty animated. But again, it's that classic difference between shy versus true introversion, and I'm definitely in the latter camp there.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I found as I talk with other introverts that whenever I say, you know, it's actually kind of more comfortable to be in front of the group than it is to be part of the group in many instances. And they usually kind of resonate with that, because I think we've got, when we're in front of the group, we have the floor. You know, we've got our venue, and we don't have to necessarily elbow our way through to be heard and to have our opinions put forward.
We can, you know, we can prepare to the point we're not having a nervous breakdown, and we can get in character. And aren't quite a few Hollywood actors, didn't I hear somewhere, are pretty
introverted? Yes, that's very true. Yeah, I think it's because they get to put on that role, but then, you know, they'd step back and they value their privacy, you know, greatly. So that's, yeah, it seems contrary, but it's actually kind of makes sense when you think about it. So I know from hearing you speak that LinkedIn, and that's what I want to focus on for our conversation, because I know you're quite the expert with LinkedIn, and hearing your presentation really enlightened me. And I know that it's a powerful tool both for the job seeker as well as the entrepreneur who's looking to make new connections. So maybe I want to start with that first piece about the job seeker, because I know there's probably more than one person listening who might be in the market for a job. For clients that you have who are looking for employment, how do you recommend that they leverage LinkedIn?
I can definitely give some thoughts on that, but can I frame things from a bigger perspective?
Absolutely.
And just say, I think maybe to kind of back up my credibility on this for anyone who's wondering, part of my, as I got into this whole coaching, consulting, you know, job searching thing in the mid-90s, right when the internet was kind of coming online, and having a pretty strong technical background, I mean, for, I don't know, 16, 17 years now, I've been looking at all these internet sites that come out and just testing them very seriously to see, are they worth a darn, or are they just a flash in the pan or hype? Because as I always joke, and you probably heard me at the speech, is, you know, I'm not a social media expert who spends my days just playing with gadgets, looking at the latest thing. I'm just looking for what the practical value of them tend to be. So out of thousands of sites, I've evaluated networking sites, job hunting sites. LinkedIn is so far ahead of the pack as far as me being able to say, wow, look at those results it gets for people. That's why kind of my side business now really is doing training on LinkedIn, you know, which certainly appeals to my audience using it for job hunting, but also to a lot of business owners and elsewhere. So I just am coming from that standpoint, first of all, that in terms of getting results, this tool to me is so far ahead of the pack, it's scary. Others may disagree. But that leads into your question about for job hunters, there's dozens of different applications. I think the two things, if you look at marketing, of which job hunting is simply a specialized form of marketing, it's either all about helping your customers find you or you going out and engaging and creating conversations with your customers. And LinkedIn is wonderful at both, as I'm sure we'll get more into, both in terms of you sort of putting your virtual resume out there for employers and recruiters to find, and so many companies now are starting to use LinkedIn in a huge way in their recruiting, and simultaneously going out proactively and saying, who are the kinds of people I need to meet? What are the kind of companies I want to get a discussion with? Again, nothing that's been invented that's more effective at getting referrals and introductions into pretty much any company these days.
Mm-hmm. And if I understand right, I always thought of LinkedIn as primarily for job seekers and companies that were looking for potential employees. That's where it had its genesis, and it has since morphed into that and more.
I would actually say it's probably been the other way around, if you can believe it. I don't have any evidence that the founders of LinkedIn had any huge intention that was going to be about job hunting. I don't remember anything catering to those audiences, but I think what happened, the natural outgrowth of having 130 million professional people on this site is, if you say, what's one of the dominant networking needs of today? Well, this last 3 years, especially with the economic scene, it's just become that a lot of networking centers around career stuff right now. And so LinkedIn has gotten a little more associated than that with it, I think is even fair. But rest assured, there's 130 million people using it. And as bad as our economy may be, there's not 130 million people out of work. So that's just kind of the really visible part of it. But millions of salespeople, business owners are using it in lots of other ways as well. So I hope everyone's kind of clear on that.
Yeah, thank you for clarifying that, because, you know, my misperception, I'm guessing I'm not the only one with that misperception. And it's been through conversations with people like you and whatnot that I'm starting to say, okay, so maybe it is a little bit more powerful. It's powerful for those folks as well as for the entrepreneur or salesperson or anyone looking to solidify professional connections.
Well, to give you an analogy, it would be like so many of the professional networking groups, trade associations, industry groups. If you attend them these days, you'll find an awful lot of the people who come are looking for work. And so if you take this into an offline realm and just say, where, when people have an opportunity to network offline and online, what's a dominant subject today? And it's careers. And so just like, yeah, you'd go to a professional association that historically has been about people connecting about professional development and education, you find a lot of them have a lot more employment vibe to them now, just again, because of what we're going through as a society.
So what about, this is a purely selfish question, what about for the random introvert entrepreneur who is a service provider, maybe a coach, who's wanting to reach new clients? What's a way that they can use LinkedIn for that sort of thing? And I throw in that introvert in there because I think, as you're probably aware, introverts tend to love social media. Maybe it's a love-hate, but yes, we love it because, you know, there's a level of engagement and detachment at the same time, and that we can, you know, kind of go at our own pace. And I see LinkedIn as a great way to look before I leap. And so, back to my question, as an entrepreneur, as a service provider, how could I use LinkedIn to reach potential new clients or prospects?
Well, I think that, you know, the first invention that the introvert nation celebrated was email, as perhaps the most wonderful thing ever invented. And then 10 years later, 15 years, social media are kind of the next killer app for introverts for the reasons you said, just the caution, the ability to control it and prepare. But, you know, where I would start with that is just, again, to make sure everyone realizes what LinkedIn actually is. You could easily get so distracted by all the changing features and mechanics, but we've never before had a real-time database of virtually every professional in the country, or at least an awfully huge chunk of them at 130 million, where people are putting their basically full searchable work history and resume. So, you know, forget everything else about it. That's just an amazing thing we've never had access to search people in this country, in the workforce, that quickly, that accurately, that deeply. And that's what makes all these features so powerful. The second thing I would say about it, for anyone wondering, is LinkedIn is not terribly effective for people selling business-to-consumer products and services. meaning it's a one-to-one medium. Outside of a few exceptions, you're really communicating with one other person at a time. So anyone thinking, I'm going to launch this new consumer product and use LinkedIn to get the word out about this new designer jeans I invented, there are much better ways to get your message out to millions of Americans or thousands of people. Even a Facebook fan page does much better than that. But where LinkedIn shines is those one-on-one connections to where someone, as you said, who's a service provider, really needs to ask the question, out of all the types of people in the workforce, who are the types of people most instrumental into me getting where I need to go? So if it's a business-to-business product or service provider, that's pretty easy. Someone who sells aerospace parts to businesses, aerospace companies, could look on and find 500 purchasing managers within aerospace companies and go after them. Someone selling consumer product can still use LinkedIn, but they would be asking more the question, let's say if it was a mortgage broker or someone. Well, I can't find on LinkedIn who needs a mortgage and who doesn't, but I can reach out and build very strong referral partnerships with complementary service providers, financial planners, real estate agents, career coaches, whomever. That's what it's great for, is just finding and building those referral relationships with the people who can go help you get to your customers, because they go after a similar customer base. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I appreciate the expansion of how we're looking at this beyond just I'm looking for, you know, clients or prospects, and that I'm forming relationships for referrals. That's because that forms something that's mutually beneficial, because I always want to know, who can I refer someone to? And, you know, in the reciprocal, I'm hoping that they would learn enough about me that they would keep me in mind for referrals. And so it seems like LinkedIn is a great place to be making those kinds of connections.
You can even take that to the point of, again, it's not just reaching out to people as strangers, but it's finding people who come spoken for by a trusted friend, and you can read recommendations about them so that you're really building, you know, very, very strong and credible referral partnerships, so that you don't have to go out and charm everyone to death, as some extroverts are good at. And you can sort of create this external sales force that brings clients to you, which I think for introverts is a wonderful state of affairs. If they can.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And I want to circle back to that particular point about how people make connections on LinkedIn and how that can help the referral piece, or potentially put throw a wrench into the works. So I want to circle back to that, if that's all right. So you touched on this, but it was one of the questions I had about, you know, what if I'm a retailer? What if I am more of a brick and mortar, or I have a product that I'm looking for people to I want awareness? And it sounds like you were saying, you know, a Facebook page might be more effective than LinkedIn, but there still might be some things on LinkedIn that could be useful to me.
Yeah, a couple things in a case like that. I mean, for starters, you're building and nurturing a relationship of, you know, with other individuals you trust. So if nothing else, for someone in that situation, the ability to get the word out to all of your advocates. So let's say I do run a retail store and I've got 500 connections on LinkedIn, people I trust. Well, I certainly can use that to remind them and say things like, hey, we're having a sale next week, or I'm going to do this special promotional event. There's an events part on LinkedIn, you can promote some things. So it still has value, but it's not necessarily, if it makes sense, reaching out to your end consumer, because again, you know, you want to get to, if you're in a case like that, thousands or tens of thousands of potential customers, and that's not what LinkedIn is great at. Other sites or even just traditional direct marketing or advertising is better for that. But to promote things among your intimate web of advocates, fans, people who can help get the word out is one application. If you need to hire anyone for your store, you can certainly go right after people who have the exact right skills to be your next, you know, office manager, store manager, barista, whatever it might be. You can, like I said, reach out to build referral partnerships with some other people complementary to what you do. And, you know, let's say you need vendors. I need a graphic designer, a website developer. It's a wonderful way to find some trusted people who do that versus just taking your chances on the Yellow Pages or Google. So it has lots of applications, but it's not going to be that one-to-many tell 100,000 people about my sale next week. It's just not really designed for that.
Sure. So along those lines, you know, if I'm an entrepreneur of any type, whether it's services or products, and I want to make sure that people can find my profile. One of the most useful parts of the presentation I saw you give was talking about, you know, how can you make sure that you are searchable and findable? How can I make sure, you know, what are your best tips for making sure that my profile is strong?
That's a great question. And that's where I tell everyone to start on LinkedIn or, boy, almost anything today, resumes, social media in general, because what people have to remember, it seems obvious, but the only way we can find each other, at least that I'm aware of, and things may change, is by keyword searching. I mean, when I look on Google for a local vendor, I type words in the English language and I see what comes back. LinkedIn's no different. So even if one doesn't do anything beyond this with LinkedIn, even if they were just going to set something up, walk away, bait the trap, the number one thing is to think like your customer and pack your LinkedIn profile with all the right keywords that someone looking for what you do would be likely to search on. But that's trickier than it sounds, because most of us have been doing things for so many years, we're too close to it. So in my case, on my LinkedIn profile, for example, in one great place on LinkedIn to do this, there's a box called the specialties section that a lot of people don't use. But I advise people in the specialties box to just pack together 20 or 30 of their most searchable keywords and just separate them with like semicolons or slashes or some character like that. But on mine starts out, if I remember, with it says career coach / career coaching / career counselor / career counseling. Now, those mean the exact same thing, all four of those phrases, but the point is I don't know which one of those someone would type in looking for someone like me. So I have to outthink my customer or think like my customer, put in every possible thing, because LinkedIn, at least, is not a site that makes guesses. It doesn't know that career counselor and career counseling are related. So time and time again, when I run examples for people in some of my classes and webinars, I show them that over 95% of people on LinkedIn don't even have the obvious basic keywords for what they do for a living on their profile, much less some of the more sophisticated ones. So that's where I would start, is advise your listeners to just get smart around the 20 or 30 terms that people would use to find them and just make sure they're on that profile somewhere. Just like if they have a website, they probably need them on there for, you know, search engine and SEO purposes. Same idea with LinkedIn.
What else would make it? Any other tips in terms of making sure your profile is as powerful a presence as possible?
Yeah, so if you get by the findability factor I just talked about, and repetition does count. Now, I'm not one of these people who thinks you should repeat a word 10 times in a row just to show up higher in the rankings, because I think once someone actually finds you, it's obvious what you're doing and they'll feel like you just duped them. But yeah, if you have those words a couple different places, your work history section, your summary, but beyond just the keyword matching, there's a number of other points into how to optimize one's profile, and certainly could be very boring to listen to them without having a screen in front of us and walking through it. But the second thing I would probably say is you want to have a headline, which is the text that goes right under your name on LinkedIn. And you want that headline to really be tuned to what category or box you fit out in the job market. By default, it's going to match your current or most recent actual job title. But in a lot of cases, you want to change that, because that's going to be the first thing people see if you come up as a search, is that headline. So rather than say president of XYZ company, it would be better to say something like senior executive consumer products and wireless, or professional coach, life transformations and introversion, you know. So something that in, you know, 5 to 10 words, someone will look at that and go, oh, now I get what that person does, which is not always communicated very well by job titles, if that makes sense. So I think adjusting that headline, and then lastly, going down into summary, which is a big blank box where you can basically write a bio for yourself. I wish people would, A, use that more to actually put something in there, and secondly, take a little more of a chance and really share some things about their passion, their differentiators, and just help me or the reader get to know, what are you all about, and what's your work passion? And that should go in the summary box.
Because often you just see somebody that just sort of puts a bullet point list of responsibilities, or, you know, it almost reads like a job description.
Or even they'll just copy from their resume, which is usually a little more abstract than, you know, I don't know who came up with the etiquette, but LinkedIn's more you talking about you in the first person versus the kind of weird third person resume style.
Well, you just brought up a word that I was going to bring up next, which is etiquette, because sometimes I get a little nervous on things like LinkedIn because I feel like there might be some sort of etiquette, you know, underpinning it all that I'm not sure of the rules. And so what are the biggest mistakes that you see people making when they're using LinkedIn?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's one I always, you know, cover in some of my trainings because it's not the stuff that the casual user of any site, you know, kind of those unwritten rules are always the toughest thing to come by. So a couple key things. I would start, there's not many fatal things about the etiquette, meaning, you know, I don't want people panicked or gun-shy about just learning by trial and error because there's not all that much you can do that's, you know, going to cause a big problem. It's just learning what's going to work a little better. But on that note, I don't know if you'd plan to ask a question. I think one piece of etiquette, especially when you're starting, is not to connect with strangers. LinkedIn doesn't think you should do that. I don't think you should do that. Others do disagree on that. But to me, you know, you don't want to connect to people you can't endorse and trust and have at least some level of relationship with, because that's where, especially learning the ropes of this tool, you can be – someone could potentially use it inappropriately. So I would only connect with people you know and trust to some extent. The second big point of etiquette, I might have an extra beef about this, but I just blogged about this the other day. Whenever you're inviting somebody to connect with you, kind of friending you on LinkedIn, to use Facebook terminology, always, always, always include a personalized note and delete the standard script that comes up when you send a LinkedIn invite. And the reason for that is I remind people politeness and courtesy and relationships don't work really any differently on a social media site than they do the way they've worked for thousands of years in the real world. So if you're inviting someone you haven't seen for a few months, it's sort of borderline rude to just not even take the time to write them a note, to just use that standard, I'd like to add you to LinkedIn script. Us more accomplished users, we were looking for a sentence or two. Hey, Matt, I haven't seen you in months. Hope life is good and you got good plans for Thanksgiving. Would love to connect with you here on LinkedIn if you're interested. So I don't know why so few people tend to do that, but there's a lot of us that just think if you really want to build a relationship and show some warmth, don't ever use the default LinkedIn scripts. Take the time to delete them and just insert your own. And it'll be very obvious when to do that or where to do that once you start using the site.
Yeah, I have to echo, that's one of my, I think it's my biggest pet peeve about LinkedIn users is when someone initiates a connection with me and I don't know who they are and they haven't personalized it in any way. And I would appreciate even something like I read your blog or I've listened to your podcast or just a little thing that tells me something about the connection. And so I know somebody's not just trying to build their numbers or they're just interested in being introduced to someone I know, you know, so I'm so glad you mentioned that because.
Well, like you said, flattery will get you everywhere. If there's someone I would never say a complete stranger, but someone I haven't seen in a long time or maybe met once at a trade show and they say something nice like that, I read your blog, blah, 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 you know, I'm going to be much more inclined to invite them in. I just think that's basic common courtesy.
Yeah. Just give me some context, especially if we are using LinkedIn in the ways you're talking about in terms of those relationship building and know, like, and trust somebody.
One other tip before we move on in invitations, another key friction point with LinkedIn, you know, is about should you accept all these invites, even from people you don't know well. And in the fact that all of us are kind of confused and having to learn that together in the 21st century, how to use social media. If you're inviting someone you don't know that well, the polite thing to do is say, hi, Beth, I met you at that event, if you may recall, a few months ago. And then just to say, I'm not sure what your policy is with regard to these types of sites, but if you'd be open to it, I'd sure be interested in connecting and possibly looking at some win-win, you know, potential in our networks. So giving the other person an out to gracefully say, I really don't want to connect with you at this time, nothing personal, but maybe they have a policy that's more, you know, just really close-knit people they know well. So whenever you're on the fence, I think a smart thing to do is just give them an out and be very diplomatic and just say, I'm not sure what your policy is, but if you'd be up for it, I would sure be happy to do so.
Nice. Yeah, I like that. And that does lead me to my next question, which was about your philosophy for making connections. Because I think people now, you know, we're maybe a little bit more comfortable with the platform and how to use it, but there's still that question of who do I say yes to? And if I say no, am I being rude? You know, what's how do I determine that? So you've touched on it here, but I just wondered if you could reiterate or expand on any criteria that you recommend we consider when either we're reaching out or someone is reaching out to us.
Yeah, you bet. It's a very important issue with the site. I would remind people that even though LinkedIn is making that issue much more visible, like in terms of having to decide yes or no, should I have this relationship, again, there's a parallel to it in the real world. I mean, it's kind of like a coworker you don't care for much. Do you invite them to your birthday party? Or if someone asks you for a favor or for a reference that you don't know very well or think highly of. I mean, we've all faced those kind of awkward situations where you have to decide between just gritting your teeth and doing it or saying no and hurting their feelings. It's just that LinkedIn, that kind of in sites like this, raise that issue a little more. So to start out, I will say there is controversy on this. There is a minority of people on LinkedIn, I think they're a minority, probably 30%, that think it is all about quantity and one should connect with anyone who asks. These people go by the moniker of LION in capital letters you'll often see on their headlines. It says LION, which stands for LinkedIn Open Networker, and they're basically bragging or inviting and saying, I'll connect with anyone. My running gag or joke on that, I hope it's appropriate for this audience, but as I just call them, the swingers of LinkedIn, because they are saying, I will hook up with anyone on this site. I know people I highly respect that go that route because they say, well, gosh, the more people you connect with, the more stuff, the more people you can get to for your needs. Being possibly an introvert or someone who just looks at this from a little different perspective, I'm in the majority that includes LinkedIn themselves that thinks you shouldn't connect to strangers. You basically should be connecting to people you could at least give a conditional endorsement, a.k.a. they haven't done anything to to make you not want to endorse them or pass them along. Because otherwise, to me, if it was just a whole bunch of 130 million random strangers interacting, it would lose most of its value. It would just be like the Yellow Pages. What I love about it is when I go through a friend to get to another friend and we all trust each other, there's sort of that old property in math. I wasn't a great math student. Was it the transitive property or something? If I trust Beth and Beth says I can trust John, I can probably trust John a lot more than I could trust a random person on the street. And that's where I think some of the real high-quality stuff on LinkedIn is these introductions are fortified with this trust and this warmth that the people who connect every Tom, Dick, and Harry, I think, frequently have bad experiences or the response rates are really low because there's no relationship juice there anymore. It's simply just random people. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
But again, there's a camp that would argue the contrary. That's how I've come to use it in my years of playing with it.
And I find sometimes I get caught in a gray area of, well, it's somebody who has connections that I respect. Like I'll check to see who do we share in common. And then, this is, again, assuming this is someone I've never met in person or even connected with virtually, except for this LinkedIn invitation. But I'll see that we have mutual acquaintances that I trust. And maybe they are, you know, another coach or, you know, someone who is professionally aligned with me. That's where I find that gray area of saying, oh, you know, why not? I should, you know, build my circle of colleagues and peers. But then, you know, based on what you're saying, it's like, but, you know, does that dilute the connections that I'm making?
Well, it sounds like I'm, you know, talking out of both sides of my mouth. I think there are exceptions to every rule. I think common sense, if someone invites you, that all the things suggest common acquaintances, they write you a personalized note showing they at least have the emotional intelligence to understand these sites and the relationships. Yes, I myself have let a few strangers in where I thought, you know what, all the signs are I can trust this person. I will tend to let recruiters into my network because I want as many of those in my network as possible on behalf of my clients, so they sort of get a free pass with me. So again, I stick by what I said, but I do think there's a few exceptions, and just know if someone ever abuses it, you can unfriend them. So if you were to take a chance on a few people and someone asks for some big favor or ask inappropriately, well, at that point you can take the law into your own hands. But I still wouldn't make a practice of just connecting with a lot of people you don't know well, though.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, and the word that pops up as you were sharing that is to be strategic. And so, you know, to have determined that for yourself and not be unintentional or unstrategic about it. And so as long as you know what you're doing, then, you know, you can live in that gray area a little bit.
Yeah, it's a perfect word for it. I'm going to steal it from you. Thank you.
You're welcome. I made that word up myself. No.
Yeah, no one's ever heard of it. But just to kind of put it in contrast, you know, I'm up to now about 1,600 or 1,700 first-degree friends on LinkedIn, which is a much bigger number than some people. However, keep in mind, I've been doing this many years, and like you, in a very customer-focused business. But my number is missing a whole decimal point. There's people with 10, 20, 30,000 connections on LinkedIn that are those lions that just connect with. It's an arms race to them. They're connecting. And I just wonder how much time a day those people have to spend now, if they regret it, processing frivolous requests. And that's something I'm thankful I don't have to do, because only the people asking for something are people I know and want to help, because I have a relationship with them.
Well, thank you for taking a little bit of extra time to flesh that one out, because I think that's one of the bigger conundrums that social media has brought to us is, what's the definition of a friend? What's the definition of a connection? And something that used to be obvious and now has gotten a little fuzzy. So thank you for that. To wrap up this part of the discussion about LinkedIn, what are some other ways that people can leverage LinkedIn that aren't obvious but are still highly effective?
Well, it probably falls into the camp of obvious, but I'm going to say it anyway. Virtually all the key features of LinkedIn derive, going back to that key understanding of 130 million people with full resumes, so to speak, on there. So the people page on LinkedIn, the people search page, which is not one of the most prominently featured pages on the site, is where 95% of the value is, because that's where people are looking for, you know, recruiters, vendors, customers, people to hire, or if they see an advertisement, let's say at the Gates Foundation, and they know they're dead meat unless they can find an inside referral source, they go there, they look up Gates Foundation, and before they know it, they find 10 friends of friends work there, and they can ask for all those warm introductions. So I just couldn't move on without saying I'm flabbergasted how few people, and LinkedIn deserves some part of the blame for this, really even get the people search page or have gone there and understand the power of all those search options on that page. So that's the golden goose on LinkedIn. But then there's so many other features, things like the answers page, which is an amazing, you know, my second favorite part of the site, where people can ask virtually any business or career question under the sun. And amongst the millions of people who troll that part of the LinkedIn section, they can often offer you, you know, thousands of dollars of free advice out of the goodness of their hearts, because you basically post a question up, and for a week, people on LinkedIn that see it can chime in and respond.
And can I ask you a quick question about that?
Sure.
To clarify, answers are different from discussions, because you don't have to necessarily be a group or connected to answer an answer section, right?
The answer section is a distinct page, yes, that has nothing to do with like the groups or discussions, where you can informally like put a note out in a group and say, hey, anyone have any thoughts on this? But the answers page goes out or is accessible to the entire 130 million, and it's very structured. Not that they all look at it, but you still get millions of people who – and just, again, I could bore you all day with people who have put questions, tough questions out there, and been shocked when 15 people take the time to write back, and there's no anonymity, so you can see the credentials of the people answering the questions. I've had people ask questions about like immigrating for jobs, and had immigration attorneys weigh in on stuff that I can only imagine how much they would have charged to go in and ask that question in person. So that's one of the most undiscovered, I think, unsung heroes, is that answers page. And then you've got the companies page for building lists of useful companies by different criteria. Got the groups page, as you mentioned, to kind of rub elbows with people in certain industries. It just keeps on going, but those are some of the big ones.
Awesome. Thank you for that. Yeah, I'm thinking I need to go on there. Like, for instance, I'm looking to lease my first office space, and I've never done it before. So it'd be interesting to go on and just ask the question, you know, what should I be looking out for? Which questions should I ask? Anything that I should be keeping an eye out for? Seems like that. Would that be a kind of question that could go on that answer board?
It would be perfect, and I would predict with my crystal ball here, I guess you'd probably get maybe 10 to 15 answers to a question like that from people who are leasing agents, people who have leased office or themselves. Like, that might be the kind of thing I'd weigh in and say, yes, I've made all the mistakes in the book. Please, Beth, don't replicate them.
Right, right.
But that, what I love about that example is it's one of the bazillions of examples that's not career or job related. You know, again, someone could say, how is Obamacare going to affect my business costs? Someone could say, what software is best for tracking sales activity? I mean, there's just any business question under the sun. There's over 200 categories there, ranging from sustainability to digital marketing to finance, that I just think you'd have a ball if you threw a question like that out there and just saw what response you got.
And here's an etiquette question then about the answer board. So I throw that question up there, and somebody sees I'm in Tacoma, Washington, and she happens to be a leasing agent. She has a spot that she thinks I might be interested in, because I say, you know, oh, I'm looking for like a under 300 square foot single person office space. What does etiquette dictate to that leasing person who sees that question?
Well, two things there. For starters, I perhaps should clarify this. The answers page is not terribly effective when you have a geographical related question. It's not bad etiquette. You know, for example, if someone just said, I need to lease an office in Tacoma or something, that probably won't work very well, because you've got 130 potential million people who have no clue about Tacoma. So you'd be asking something more about what are the keys to negotiating or finding a good agent or negotiating properly. That's the kind of question you'd get some great feedback on. Now, if a real estate agent from Tacoma or wherever chimed in, again, the beauty is you could look at, were they nice enough to give you some useful, helpful information that makes you think this person gets it? This is someone willing to give to get. If they, of course, chimed in and just said, call me, I want to represent you, then you might not respond, or you might just blow them off a little bit. But I don't think you'd see much of that.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, because I thought it seems like if I put that question out there generically, what should I look for? But then they went through and they saw my profile and said, oh, I happen to be in that area, or I happen to have space. It sounds like it's not cool for that person to say, oh, you should call me, I've got the perfect space in downtown.
Well, no, actually, it's cool.
It's cool? Okay.
It's not a violation of etiquette. It's just... it would be a little crass to just say that or not. If the question was around tips and you didn't give any tips, that would be sort of like you weren't answering the question. If your question was, does anyone have any space in Tacoma, and that's what they said, it would be the right answer to the right question. But yeah, someone just overtly not looking to help. But even then, again, no foul. You could say, well, I'm willing to consider it if you really, and you could start having a chat with them offline. Honestly, you won't see that too terribly often. It's just like in my field, some people will ask a question about resumes, and people will just say, oh, I write resumes, call me. And that's fine. I just wouldn't probably respond unless they said more than that.
Yeah.
Added
well,
some value.
Yeah, it makes me think about how the other thing that's something of a learning curve for people on social media is that line between, you know, self-promotion and service.
Yeah, people can flag answers as either spam or self-promotional. So if someone really crossed that line, enough users would probably flag it and would pull that answer off there. So there is some policing of that.
Very good. Well, thank you for elaborating a little bit on that, because I think it is something that we're cautious of. Like, okay, I really want to ask this question, but I also don't want a whole slew of phone calls and emails now because people know that I'm in the market.
Yeah, it's not like you're going to get hundreds of responses. You're going to get 10 or 20 or 5 good ones. So I wouldn't, you know, just try it. You can even go in and search. You don't have to post a question. Just go use the search archive to look up other people's questions, and you'll get a taste in a hurry of, you know, how that part of the site works and what to expect. But it really is, to me, the second most amazing part of the site.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, thank you for that. And it sounds like, you know, overall, it's like common sense needs to be the prevailing attitude. It's just, you know, use your common sense about how you answer, what you post, who you decide to respond to. Use your gut feeling. And
now, you may be delighted to know I just did a tiny second of multitasking. My apologies, but I just searched the entire answers archive for how many questions or answers mentioned introvert or introversion. There were 33, ranging from how can an introvert lead most effectively to can introverts become leaders to arrogance at work. So even a topic like that, there's people chatting about it.
Awesome. Thank you for doing that. I think we'll have a huge opportunity, you know, to engage in some conversation and to be of assistance and to learn what people are talking about. Like, what are the burning questions? Because I'm guessing one would get more than a few ideas for blog posts and whatever else, you know, from just paying attention to what are people talking about.
Yeah, that's what I love about it.
Yeah. So to wrap things up, I kind of want to circle back to how we started when we were talking about job seekers. And I think of this not just for job seekers, but anyone who's in a situation where they're looking to attract work, clients, customers, anything like that. But what words of hope do you have for folks who are feeling a little bit lost or desperate?
Well, we've got a boy. We've got to be very careful with that language. I'm certainly not a trained therapist. So if someone, I feel like I have to say by the book, if someone has lost hope and is feeling desperate and really facing that kind of stuff, honestly, they probably need to address that with counseling or someone, because what I'm going to say, you know, which is there's still tons of opportunities out there. Companies have as many needs, problems, challenges today as they had 5 years ago, 10 years, 15 years ago. But the game, the process, they're getting so much more picky that individuals job hunting, the first and foremost thing is they've got to put their game face on and approach the job hunt just as they would approach any other professional challenge. If someone went at work and assigned someone a project, hey, I need this done in 6 months, this new accounting system, this software built, most people I meet, you know, they've done that for 20 years and have incredible track records of project management, deadlines, but for some weird reason that sort of keeps me in Plymouth is a lot of those that professionalism and that go-getting mindset and that goal orientation atrophies. They're just not used to applying it to the challenge of finding work. So on one hand, I say I think great things can happen when someone finally gets the memo and starts planning and managing their job hunt as they would an important project at work. That being said, there are definitely some people whose confidence has been so beaten down coming out of a bad layoff or just the market or the drumbeat of all the negative news from the media that I definitely think some people, as part of their job search strategy, need a stress management component or counseling to remind themselves via volunteering, therapy, surrounding themselves with friends that they can't lose hope. There's still lots of stuff out there. But the key is to take it seriously. Don't assume that just sending out a few resumes a week is going to get you there, because it just sadly doesn't anymore.
Yeah. Well, you said something towards the beginning about the connection between the advertising and marketing that you got started in, and then basically somebody who's searching for a job is marketing themselves. And to approach that, at least if I heard you correctly, you know, that,
oh, absolutely.
That
no.
There's a similarity between those two things.
Yeah, it's more of a parallel than people realize. And now, I mean, for good or bad, we'd probably say bad. It's just we're all free agents. And I think the market and companies are saying, you know, we're not taking responsibility to bring people in, train them, and keep them here for 20 years anymore. And as much as we miss those days, I sure do. Again, you got to learn how to play the game today. And I think that's where people take responsibility for learning how to promote and market themselves. And to tie all this together again, even introverts like myself, having studied this, there's so many great new technologies and ways to do that. So that's where social media has been just such a useful tool compared to just going out and schmoozing at every social event in town, which I would do over my own dead body.
Right, exactly. My definition of hell.
Thankfully, there's an alternative.
Yes. So I would chime in here with then two things. You know, one, that to look at things like the social media, LinkedIn and whatnot as true gifts and true offerings of hope that there are people out there willing and wanting to connect. And like you said, that even if all the news is dire, the needs are still there. and being willing to put yourself out there. So I would say first, anyone listening, take Matt's advice and get yourself on LinkedIn if you're not already. And then when you're on there, you know, make sure you're maximizing your profile and hanging out in the places where you're going to get the visibility and connections that you need. And then secondly, what this brought up for me is the book Self-Promotion for Introverts. Have you heard of that one by any chance?
I don't think I have. I'll have to add that to the list.
It's by Nancy Enkowitz, and I actually did a podcast interview with her about a year or so ago. And, you know, it really hits home in terms of introverts often have a little bit of challenge with self-promotion. You know, it's not our natural MO to get ahead. We're not necessarily going to be wanting to put ourselves in the spotlight or brag about our accomplishments or, you know, that sort of thing. And so she offers some anecdotes and techniques for the introvert to naturally self-promote themselves, whether it's, you know, out in the, if you're in a workplace already, or if you're looking for work. So I just wanted to add that little bit in there since we were talking about self-promotion. So speaking of books, I have a question that I like to wrap up all of my podcasts with, because I think introverts tend to be pretty big readers. And that is, if you were granted a year's vacation on Introvert Island and you could only take 3 books with you, and these are actual tangible books, not Kindles or iPads or anything.
No wireless.
Which 3 books would you take with you and why?
Like most introverts, I want to parse that question 100 different ways.
Yeah.
I'm talking business books, personal books.
Anything you want. You've got a year to read.
Anything. Just for some diversity, I would probably say I'd bring along my favorite business book, or one of them, which is Now Discover Your Strengths by Marcus Buckingham and Don Clifton, which I'm sure some of your readers have read, giving great insight into people and our strengths and what makes us tick. Might bring along Carl Sagan's Cosmos, because not having much of a head for science, I can read about history and science, and I just thought he was amazing communicator, and I've read that book 3 times, could probably read it a few more times. And lastly, I just ordered Lord of the Rings because I just realized I've seen the movies, I kind of got this fantasy sci-fi background, and, you know, of any book in that genre, I think that one could entertain you on, what did you call it, Introvert Island?
Introvert Island, yes.
keep you busy for a little while till the rescue ships arrive, so. Those would be 3.
And then I always joke that, you know, the thicker the book, the more you're likely to be able to use it for, you know, a footstool if you need to reach a coconut or, you know, whatever it is. And
start a fire, rip out a fire.
Exactly, if you need kindling. See, it would provide kindling that a Kindle couldn't do. With a joke in our house is I think I've started The Hobbit like 3 or 4 times and still haven't made my way through. But I have seen the movies and enjoy those. But that would be a good thing to sink your teeth into.
Yeah, that was one of a kind, that series.
Absolutely. Well, Matt, how can people learn more about you and your services?
Well, pretty easy. Like many of us these days, I have a website that's chock full of stuff. That address, my company again, is Career Horizons, based here out of Bellevue, Washington. Web address is www.career-horizons.com. And that's got all kinds of articles I've written on careers, LinkedIn, and also has a link to my blog if you look for it. And my blog is the vehicle that I write in at least 2, 3, 4 times a week as just a give back of kind of all kinds of articles, as you do so well, on just advice, thoughts, resources, LinkedIn. I've got a whole category of LinkedIn articles on there, neat ways to use that system. So between my website and the associated blog, I think those are the portals.
And you're based in Bellevue. Do you work with clients only in this geography, or do you have a wider reach?
Most of my clients are here in the area. I have worked over the phone, done some projects for people outside of Seattle. Just depends on the specific need. Sometimes people will call from other cities, and I'll say, well, gosh, find someone in your local area who not only does what I do but has that local market knowledge if someone's looking to stay in a city and wants to know who the companies are and the recruiters, you know. But for the most part, I stick here around Seattle.
Yeah. So you serve primarily around Seattle, but it sounds like your articles and your blog can help anyone anywhere.
Yeah, that's pretty not geographically specific, you bet.
Well, thank you so much. This has been informative and enlightening and entertaining to chat with you. So I really appreciate taking time out of your busy schedule to share with us.
My pleasure. It's a great topic. Yeah, appreciate all the work you're doing on behalf of the introvert nation here, and I look forward to keeping in touch.
Good. Thanks, Matt. Thanks so much for listening today. I hope you enjoyed the conversation that Matt and I just shared. I encourage you to visit Matt's website at career-horizons.com. That dash is actually a hyphen, so career-horizons.com, to learn more about his coaching and consulting services. Just a reminder, if you're interested in making 2012 your best year ever, consider what thousands of successful entrepreneurs and leaders have done and partner with a coach. It's an investment in yourself and your business that brings many rewards. You can learn more about that, as well as the January-February group coaching experience I've mentioned in previous podcasts, on my website, theintrovertentrepreneur.com. If you enjoy these podcasts, I invite you to share them with friends, family, and colleagues, and leave a review on iTunes. You can also find out more about how to hire me for coaching, training, and speaking engagements at theintrovertentrepreneur.com. I also invite you to join us for more community and conversation on Facebook at facebook.com/theintrovertentrepreneur. Thank you so much for spending your time with us, and I will see you next time.